You send your child off to school each day with the understanding that the education system will cultivate knowledge in your child, challenge them, and provide them with a path to advance. Even if your child has special needs, you believe that the education process will still help them reach their full potential. The reality is, and that hasn't always been the case. And what's worse is that the fault lies primarily with the education system. This failure has finally been addressed through a recent decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. My first guest today is here to explain the challenges facing parents with special needs and what this decision provides. He's a New Jersey father who faces this situation every day, and for a variety of certain reasons would like to remain anonymous for this interview, but I do appreciate you being here today, sir, and thank you for offering at least your insight from your side of the situation, because I think on the outside looking in, you know, it's the old book, you know, cover in the book axiom. We don't understand fully, and we don't want to see to gain the full knowledge, but this is something that you certainly can provide. And what we're talking about here is a decision that addresses, it's Andrew F. v. Douglas County School District, which is in Colorado. It was an 8-0 ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court, which that alone should tell you that this was a significant decision. And what does this decision offer a parent such as you and your child?
Yeah, thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be on your show. And as you mentioned, I'm really not at liberty to talk about specific cases. I want to respect the gag order that is on many parents who have gone under litigation with school districts. But I should be able to give your audience a flavor for how things play out within the school districts and families with special needs children. And by special needs children, I just want to define it for the purposes of this discussion.
Sure.
We're talking children on the autism spectrum. We're talking children who may have been abused and have PTSD, you know, abused in their early life, developmental delays, severe ADHD, neurological deficits, difficulties with language processing, things of that nature, sensory processing issues. Those are the types of handicaps we're talking about here. Now, these kids are all educatable, okay? And that's the important thing to remember. As far as the Andrew F. case is concerned, the first thing I want to say is a note of gratitude to these parents of Andrew F.
Who spent years getting to this
exactly.
point.
Exactly. They, as I understand it, they spent 7 years of litigation. They must have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on legal fees. And they're not going to recoup all that money back. And they did this for they stood up for their son with an uncertain outcome. And we're all the beneficiaries of it, all those of us with special needs children. And let me explain the impact of it from my perspective. You know, without any legalese, this is what it means.
Okay.
Prior to this decision, a public school system could educate a special needs child with the lowest possible standards throughout all the 12 years of them being in the public school system. They could have an individual education plan that basically repeated itself year after year after year. And if the child learned 10 more vocabulary words from year to year to year, that was showing quote-unquote academic progress, and that could meet the standard of a court challenge. 70% of the time when parents challenge the school districts to have reimbursement for a private education at a private school, they lose. 70% of the time they lose because of this minimal educational benefit standard. That was the situation prior to the Andrew F. The basic difference with the Andrew F. case is, in addition to showing progress, as I see it, the school districts have a responsibility for, in the words of, I think it was Justice Roberts, to show an appropriately ambitious education program. So not only do they have to show progress, they have to show that they're managing this case appropriately, given the particular special needs of the child. And that's like a two-pronged level that they have to now meet in terms of a legal standard.
Which, unfortunately, the schools are responding to this, and this is the sickening part. They're more concerned about the cost to the budget versus the cost to the child for denying them an education opportunity.
Yeah, and that's very true. And let me explain that since my child has been in a private school, I've had the opportunity to network with many parents and heard many horror stories that if I could actually say what they are, they'd bring tears to the eyes of your listeners. They're so terrible. The attitude of the school districts towards special needs children runs the gamut from being truly professional and responsible to those which they make a strategic decision that they would rather pay attorney's fees to make the parents go away rather than use the money on the special services to give the child the services that they need. Okay? And they can do that because, unlike the Andrew F. case, hardly any parents are in a position to pay an advocate thousands of dollars for their services or pay an attorney tens of thousands of dollars for their services. They basically are at the mercy of the goodwill of the school district. And if they complain, as you said in your opening remarks, the school districts can turn vindictive. They can start a narrative that the parents are being uncooperative. And they can start to construct a paper trail, which is ordered toward showing that the parents are being uncooperative. They can even go so far as call the police on the parents. They can call DIFAS on the parents. They can call the truancy officer on the parents, all in an attempt to get them to intimidate and harass them and to stop basically standing up for their child and making the school look bad.
Incredible. We're talking with a New Jersey parent of an autistic child who, for obvious reasons, as you've been listening and for what he just stated, is asking to remain anonymous. He was brought to my attention by the Center for Garden State Families regarding an issue in the decision of Andrew F. V. Douglas County School District, which is, as opposed to a fragmented qualification standard for special needs educations, making him in hope, at least at this point, because still have to wait and see the decision put into practice, a more uniform, productive standard for special needs education. Garden State Families website, by the way, you can learn more about this issue at gardenstatefamilies.org, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. From what I've read, and this is not a blanket indictment of all schools, as you said, some get it, some don't. If a child with special needs is allowed to coast through, in the worst-case scenario, at best, they're going to graduate public school with a second to third grade learning ability. If specialized efforts are made, that same child could graduate with an ability somewhere between 8th, 9th, maybe 10th grade level, which would allow them, by most professionals' understanding, to allow them to earn a trade, earn a living. So we're talking about the cost on the average of $50,000 per student per year for special needs teaching. A trade can produce a salary equal to that, maybe even more than that. So you're actually doing, if the schools want to talk about money, you're talking about a positive for the economy of anywhere between $75,000 to $100,000.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about, let's not pull any punches here. It is very expensive for districts to send a child to a private school, which are on the order of anywhere from $50,000 to $80,000 a year. But you may only have to do that for 3 years till they catch up. And then, you know, they're in full education mode and have educational momentum, caught up to their peers, if all goes well. And then that $240,000 is a good investment because otherwise, as you said, with a second grade education, they're in no position to earn a living. And they're going to be a ward of the state, you know, and the public would have to pay $60,000 to support them for the rest of their life based upon their disability. So that's a good trade-off for the public, which goes unnoticed, totally unnoticed. What the public is concerned about, and I can understand this, is their property taxes, and they're worried about breaking the bank on special needs children. But you know what? Every business generally is under some sort of regulatory constraint whereby certain costs are mandatory to comply with those regulations. In school districts, there is Individuals with Disabilities Act and an offshoot of it, the Free and Appropriate Public Education. They need to budget for it no matter what it costs. These costs are not to be discretionary. And another point is these schools have the money. It's just a matter of how they're going to allocate their budget. They can fund these programs as they need, as they see fit. They would just rather spend it in other areas. I'm going to give you an analogy, which I think is very instructive.
Okay.
All right. As I said, the court standard for showing that the schools are doing their part is only a modicum of educational improvement. Now, imagine if you're a handicapped person and you go to the YMCA, and you're looking for that contraption that lowers the that you see in every pool. It lowers the people into the pool so they can fully enjoy the experience of being in a pool. But instead of spending the $50,000 on that contraption, suppose the YMCA says, we're just going to pay a lawyer to make these complaining people go away. So the handicapped person goes to the pool, and they're lowered into the pool, and they're able to dangle their toes into the water. They complain, they file a complaint. And the judge says, well, you know, you did get a modicum of a pool benefit. You did get your toes wet. Therefore, I rule in favor of the YMCA. That's basically what's going on here.
That's a great analogy. We have
exactly.
We have to wrap things up here. But, again, the decision has, when it's a U.S. Supreme Court decision, so there is no appeal, obviously. Given your experience, at least in the school that you're dealing with, what is your hopes as far as a response, an effective response, and the pace of that response?
Well, I don't want to talk about my particular case at all, but I will say there are a couple of things that need to be changed. First of all, most parents have no idea what the system they're about to be involved entails. They have no idea about the private school opportunities. So therefore, during the IEP, they need to be in, as well as fully briefed on their rights, which cost, if they were to exercise them, cost thousands of dollars, as I said, to really make good on them. They also need to be fully aware of all the private school opportunities available. So if they have a child that needs X, Y, and Z services, and the school only offers X and Y, but the private school does offer X, Y, and Z, they can make a case to go there. And basically, that's basically the only way these parents win the case is if the school doesn't have the services that they need.
Basically, the parents have to remember that they are the advocates for the children, and it's their decision and their expectations and their requirements that take precedent, not a school ledger sheet.
And there's one more thing. Any school official who interferes with a private placement in a private school, they need to suffer jail time and severe penalties. Because what can happen is these private schools are slaves to the public school. Sometimes they will not take a private placement, even though they're willing to pay out of pocket, because they will be deemed as uncooperative in the school district from which the kid came from. And as in retaliation, the school district will refuse to provide referrals to that private school, and it may be the difference between them closing and staying open.
Well, thank you. We have to wrap up here, but thank you for your standing up and for your child and your situation with what sounds to me a battle that still will have to be fought to some degree. And I think your standing up is going to be the words and the guidance that other parents need to be reminded of their duty as a parent, and as well as an advocate for the education of the children, no matter what degree of abilities or disabilities happen to be. Learn more about this issue at GardenStateFamilies.org. And, sir, I thank you for your time and your insight today.
Okay, thank you.